touch my toes, but I can't crouch. I can barely flex my knees before I run out of leash. I can't move away either. It'll be hard to pick anything up from the ground. Strike that. I'm an idiot. My legs don't count. Ryan can crouch from the other station, and I can grab stuff from wherever the ground will be for me. That'll be weird. I know everyone's excited, but it might take a while before we get the gist of this two-pilot thing. Of course, that'll be the least of our problems, unless there's a video screen or something in that helmet, because, well, we can't see outside. I can't see anything but metal. And the visor on the helmet looks completely opaque, so if there's no screen, then I won't see anything at all. Use the Force, Luke. Maybe that's it. Maybe this is a really big Jedi training thing, to see if you can move a 10,000-ton dummy around with your eyes closed. I don't think there's anything else I can try before I put on the helmet. You know, this really looks like a helicopter helmet. I'm putting it over my head now. I wonder if...
File number 041. Personal Journal Entry. Dr. Rose Franklin, Ph.D.
I'm angry. I'm angry with everyone. I'm angry with myself. I should know better than to experiment with things I don't understand and assume everything's going to be fine. That was stupid of me. It's not as if the leg controls left us with any doubt. This device wasn't built for humans. Who knows what this thing can do to us? How could I ask Kara to try something I know nothing about on her head and not have a medical team with her? She's still at the hospital. She said the pain was so sharp she lost consciousness almost immediately. We found her hanging by her arms at her station like Christ to the cross. The helmet had turned itself off. It took nearly a half hour for the paramedics to reach her and get her out. She could have died 1,000 times over. When she came about, she was completely blind. We almost lost her twice on the same day. Kara being Kara, she ripped out her IV the minute she woke up and tried to feel her way out of the room. She tripped over something and knocked herself unconscious on a metal cabinet. They had to close a cut on her forehead, 8 stitches or so. There were superficial burns on her face. The doctors treated them and wrapped a bandage around her head to cover her eyes. She was supposed to keep it on for a few days. Of course, she removed it after only a few hours. She said it was itching. The doctors scolded her half-heartedly. They've seen her a few times already. Routine exams, some cuts and bruises, so they were probably surprised she kept it on that long. I was. When I stopped by the hospital to see how she was doing, the whole room was agitated. Doctors were arguing amongst themselves, kept calling in other doctors to examine her. I asked what was going on about 12 times, but I couldn't get anyone to listen to what I was saying. Kara threw a lamp at the wall. That got their attention. The doctors told her that her eye was fine. She didn't seem ecstatic enough, so they went on to explain that her retina had somehow been repaired. I didn't believe it myself, but they showed us the before and after pictures. It didn't take a medical degree to see it. That helmet had fixed her. It probably detected an eye injury and proceeded to repair it. I can only hope that's why it was so painful. It's hard to express how relieved I am. Kara's fine. Better than fine, really. This is closer to a miracle. So why am I angry? Well, I was so happy. I rushed back to the lab, and I tried on the helmet myself. Stupid, right? It didn't do anything, so I asked Ryan up and had him try it on. I had every lab assistant come in and give it a go. When that didn't work, we tried the helmet at the other station. All of us. Why risk one person's life when you can go for 6? Oh, and the helmet's broken. As far as I can tell, the other one was already broken when we found it. Neither of them work anymore. What was I thinking? It repaired her eye? For all we know, these aliens might have one big eye. Maybe they have 80 of them. They might have the eyes of a fly. They might have no eyes at all. It could have ripped her skull in half, disfigured her, turned her into something she's not. A million things could have happened to her, most of which would probably have killed her. It's my job to keep her safe, to make sure nothing happens to her. I sent her up there, and she trusted me. She trusted my judgment. She trusted that I wouldn't send her in if I thought she could get harmed. I'm supposed to be a scientist. I don't know what I am anymore. Kara's scheduled for an MRI tomorrow. We should know if there's any brain damage. If I had half a brain myself, I would have waited for the results before letting anyone back in the sphere. It's too late for that. But I'll have the doctors run a lot more tests before I let Kara back in there. We should wait a few weeks anyway. She might exhibit more symptoms as time goes by. I hope she's okay, with all my heart. Not just for the sake of the project. I don't think I could live with myself if I let anything happen to her. I've grown a lot closer to her. I've grown closer to all of them, but I really like Kara. I'm not the only one who likes her. Ryan hasn't said a word, and we all let him think we haven't noticed. But of course she knows. I know. Vincent knows. I'm sure the robot knows by now. I wish Ryan only the best. Who wouldn't? But I hope his crush disappears on its own. I certainly hope they don't end up together. I love Kara, but she'd end up hurting him a lot. That being said, the two of them are doing great. It took a while, but he's learned to leave her enough space. I have to give Ryan credit for that. They complement each other quite nicely. They work well together. They'll have to if they're going to stare at each other all day. So, I have an incomplete robot with broken controls, one infatuated pilot, and one injured. I'm not sure where that leaves us. The helmets are a major setback. I don't know when or if we'll be able to fix them. Even if we manage to get them working again, there's no guarantee we can wear these things without ending up in the hospital. They weren't meant for us, after all. Which brings me to the leg controls. Ryan's really got a bad deal on this one. His helmet doesn't work and his legs bend the wrong way. I wish I could find a way to modify the leg controls to fit our anatomy, but there's too great a chance of permanently damaging the controls if we start tinkering with them. I can't reproduce the metal that was used if we break something on that station. I'll try just about anything before I let anyone approach it with a blowtorch. Ryan has it in his head that he can work the legs facing the other way, with his back to the console. He'll have to walk backward all the time. I think it's insane, but I have nothing better to offer, so I'm inclined to let him try. Walking is a lot more complicated than people think. We do it unconsciously, but it's a lot more difficult if you have to think it through. Make a comment to someone about the way they walk and see how awkward they become. It's complex and hard to decompose. They won't be able to keep the robot balanced if Ryan doesn't get the movements perfectly right. It's a tall and narrow structure, and the center of gravity is going to be really high. It's scary enough as it is, and I can't imagine how bad a fall would be once we get the legs on. It would probably flatten a city block or two. I brought in some engineers to create a computer simulation. It will connect to the leg controls and to the other station and convert the pilot's movement into a computer model of the robot. We'll be able to see the results on computer screens. It takes weight, speed, and several other factors into account. It should at least give us an idea of whether or not what we're trying to do is possible. So, if we get the helmets working without killing ourselves, if Ryan can control kilotons of metal while walking backward, we'll be left with the console. Ryan will be facing away from it, so someone else will need to handle that. Right now, it doesn't work, of course. Vincent seems no closer to interpreting the symbols that are on it than he was when he first came in, and we have absolutely no idea what it does. This might be unprofessional of me, but I say we can cross that bridge when we get to it. We don't know how complex it will be to operate, We might need a physicist, or a soldier, or maybe someone who's really good at video games. I know we're supposed to make these journal entries to help us cope with stress. Hell, I'm the one who suggested it. But I have to say right now, it's not helping. Do I think we'll eventually solve all these problems and make this thing work? I think getting to the moon probably felt like an impossible thing to do at first. Who am I kidding? Right now, I don't think we have a chance on Earth. I might feel differently in the morning. Either way, I'll get up and go back to work. There are simply too many breakthroughs waiting for us if we can understand how this machine works. We already know it can perform medical wonders. Who knows what else it can do? That also scares me. Am I ready to accept all that may come out of this if it works? It might give us a cure for everything. It might also have the power to kill millions. Do I want that on my conscience? I wish I knew where this journey will take us, but I don't. All I know is that this is bigger than me, my self-doubt, or any crisis of conscience. I now truly realize how profoundly insignificant I am compared to all this. Why does that make me feel so much better?
File number 042. Experiment Log. CW3. Kara Resnick. United States Army. Location: Underground Complex, Denver, Colorado.
This is Kara Resnick. Today is September 22nd. It's 3 in the morning, so no one is monitoring me. I'm probably going to get in trouble for this, but what else is new? Dr. Franklin came to see me at the hospital today. Well, yesterday now. It's obvious she feels responsible for what happened to me. I tried to make her understand this wasn't on her. I mean, it's not like I wouldn't have tried that thing on my own if she'd waited another day. She seemed devastated. Apparently, the whole project is on hold until they see if I suffer from any after effects. We'll see about that. She also told me I broke the helmet. I mean, really? I didn't do anything. I just put it on my head because it's a helmet? That's what you're supposed to do? I don't buy that it's broken either. I had an MRI today. I don't have the results yet, but I'm pretty sure that alien device didn't scramble my brain, so I don't see how my brain could have broken it. Okay, it's not the best reasoning ever, but it repaired my eye, for God's sake. Doctors couldn't do that. And that thing did. I'm sorry, but I don't think a machine that can do eye surgery after being buried underground for 3,000 years is gonna break on account of my little head. I'm not as smart as everyone else, but I think the pain was so intense because it repaired my eye. That, or it figured out that my brain isn't what it's supposed to be and it adapted somehow. Either way, if it's smart enough to fix me, I'm pretty sure it'll find a way not to kill me. I have a gut feeling it may have, what's the word, imprinted when it adapted to my brain. Like a baby duck. If I'm right, it thinks I'm its mommy now. I think that's why it won't turn on for anyone else anymore. I know that wouldn't explain why the other helmet doesn't work, but like Dr. Franklin always says, one thing at a time. You can't solve every problem at once. You see, Dr. Franklin, I was listening. Now I'm trying to solve one problem. I know what you're going to say. I haven't even been discharged from the hospital yet. You and the doctors told me to stay put and get some rest. Well, I can't rest if everything's stopped because of me. And I don't want to worry about that helmet knocking me out every time I put it on. This is me finding some peace of mind. So don't get too mad when you find out what I've done. Unless I die in the next 10 minutes. Then you can get mad all you want. Also, don't get mad at the hospital staff either. They probably thought I was going to the cafeteria, considering I told them I was going to the cafeteria. I'm at the top of the stairs now. I think next time, if there's a next time, I'll bring two bar stools with me. Just for the satisfaction of throwing one down as hard as I can. I hate these things now. From now on, I'll stand when I go to a bar. You know what I'm doing, so I'm sparing you the play-by-play. Crouching, crouching, opening the inner hatch. I'm inside the sphere. Going to brace myself in. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little nervous. This seemed like a much better idea an hour ago. Then again, I get sweaty palms when I want to ask a guy out, so par for the course. I have the helmet in my hands. I'll put it on now, before I chicken out. Be nice, little fellow. Mommy's here.
Son of a... Helmet's off! Come on! What is with this thing? It burned like hell. I couldn't even keep my eyes open. Mommy's pissed. Obviously, it wasn't as bad as the last time if I'm still talking, but that thing really hates. I'll be damned. I can't feel much with these gloves on, but I think the cut on my forehead is gone. I can tell you the stitches are gone for sure. Okay. I must be crazy. Because... I'm putting it on again. I don't see what else it could fix, except maybe some self-esteem issues. I want to see what it does when it's not healing things. Whoa. This is just amazing. I don't even know where to start. As soon as I put it on, the visor went from dark to clear, and suddenly I could see everywhere. I mean, I can see everywhere. Not just inside the chamber. I can see through the metal, outside the torso. I can see the lab. I can still see the sphere, the liquid around it, but all of it is translucent. In fact, if I focus on something outside, I can see it clear as day. If I look at something inside, then what's outside gets dimmer. It gives a bronze hue to everything, like an old photograph. Let me look around for a while. This is awesome. I know I sound like a complete moron, but I can't find the words. What is this? There's a hologram, a miniature of the robot, about 1 foot tall, projecting out of the small column in front of me. It's really cute. Dr. Franklin, I wish you could see how cool this thing is. I mean, I know what it'll look like when we have all the pieces. It's out of this world. No pun intended. Other than the legs being weird, she looks like a normal badass warrior human being. The head looks human and there's only one. Nice. The hologram is moving its head when I move mine. When I move my arms, it does exactly the same thing. It mimics every movement of my upper body. I suppose it will also move its legs as well once we get the other station working. I'm flailing my arms around like a madwoman. The actual robot arm isn't moving an inch. That's probably a good thing because I'd have destroyed everything in the lab, but the hologram has no problem moving at all. Dr. Franklin, I just realized you'll probably never experience any of this firsthand, if the helmet won't work for anyone but me. It breaks my heart that you can't see what I'm seeing after all you did, but it works. You were right, Dr. Franklin. And you see, there's no reason to wait. Everything's fine. Oh, and you're stuck with me for good. Don't worry about the arm not moving. It will probably work when we connect all the pieces, like those old Christmas lights from when I was a kid. If a single tiny light was missing, none of them would work. I wish I could try the other station. I know. Baby ducks. There's only one of me, and I can't be at both stations at the same time. Still, it'd be nice to know if it works.
File number 047. Interview with Vincent Couture. Graduate student. Location, Underground Complex, Denver, Colorado.
Dr. Franklin said you had a breakthrough.
I did. It's not language.
Already you lost me.
I couldn't figure out the meaning of the symbols. The more I thought about it, the more I realized I wasn't supposed to.
And now you have really lost me. Please say something, anything, that will make sense to me.
The people that looked at this before me, they couldn't come up with an interpretation because they lacked a frame of reference. They didn't know the grammar of that language. They didn't know the vocabulary. They didn't even know what this was about. They needed something to compare it to. Do you know what the Rosetta Stone is?
I do.
Well, so you know it's a piece of rock, like the name says, with three sections of text carved into it, one on top of the other. The top one is written in ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs, which no one understood when the stone was discovered. The middle carvings are Demotic, another Egyptian script, and the bottom one is ancient Greek, that one we knew. What's so great about the Rosetta Stone is that all three texts are about the same thing. Do you know what it's about?
That I do not know.
It's a decree.
Yes.
Basically, it establishes the new king as a god. Because ancient Greek was a known language at the time, it was used as a starting point, and they were able to recognize key elements in the hieroglyphs by looking at the repetitions. They were able to figure out how Egyptian hieroglyphs worked because they had the Greek version of the text as a reference.
But whoever wrote on the panels did not leave us a Rosetta Stone.
Maybe they did. Logically, without a frame of reference, we shouldn't be able to do anything with this. They would know that. But if Dr. Franklin is right, this was left for us on purpose. So I started thinking, what if this is the Rosetta Stone? What if this isn't a message written in a different language, but a key to interpreting something else? It would have to be about something we already have in common, something universal. Then it hit me. It's not words. It's math. We may not be as advanced or evolved as the people who wrote this. We might not be able to understand things that would seem trivial to them. But the one thing that we absolutely, positively must have in common is some form of math. We both need to count things. I think they kept this thing simple enough so we could understand it. But they made sure we could get as many important concepts as we could out of it. There are seven curvy symbols on the panels, and each has a dot in the middle. All of them also appear on the console. If you count the number of curvy lines in each one, you get the numbers 1 through 7. It's so obvious once you think about it. It just makes me mad not to have seen it before.
So, the markings on the walls are a series of numbers?
More like a series of equations. There are several of them, enough for us to interpret the other symbols, the ones that are made of straight lines. Look at this one, for example. Here we have the number 2... I skipped over the part where you have to read from right to left. I'm sorry. So, from the right, the number 2, some unknown symbol, 2 again, some other unknown symbol, then the number 4. Now fill in the blanks. 2 something, 4.
2 + 2 = 4?
Exactly. So now you know the symbol for addition and the one for equality. That last one could mean something a little different, like the result of an operation. I don't know precisely, but we're in the ballpark.
Wait. It could also be 2 × 2 = 4. How can you be certain it is not multiplication?
That's why there are so many sequences. We can use other formulas with the same symbols to verify our hypotheses. Here we have the same symbols used with other numbers. If this were a multiplication, it would read like 3 × 2 = 5, but it works if it's an addition.
What of that little line on the left? You ignored it. Is it not a symbol like the others?
It's definitely a symbol. I was getting to that. That vertical line appears at the end of every formula, except for two that end in a small square. The vertical line seems fairly pointless until you look at the two formulas with the square. If my interpretation is correct, and I'm pretty sure it is, these two would read 2 + 1 = 1 and 4 × 3 = 10.
But that is wrong.
I think that's the point. The vertical line tells us that the equation that precedes is true, and the square tells us that it's false. These two symbols might be the most important ones. Obviously, we now have symbols for true and false, but these are such powerful concepts, they might also be used outside of mathematics. If you look at my notes, you'll see that both symbols also appear next to each other on the console. True and false don't seem that useful for piloting a ship, but they probably use the same symbols for something similar, like yes and no, go and stop. Ryan thinks it's likely akin to proceed, cancel, something like that.
Mr. Mitchell? I did not know you discussed this with anyone but Dr. Franklin.
Well, we basically live in a bunker, the four of us. I have my own little area where they install the panels, but, how do I put this? I get bored, so I nose around a little. We went out for a drink a few times. Actually, they went out for a drink a few times, and they felt bad about leaving me here, so they asked me to tag along. Rose and I have gotten to know each other a lot more since I report to her, but I like hanging out with Ryan and Kara. Ryan's a nice guy. He's a little too Captain America at times, but he grows on you. I like Kara. She doesn't open up much, with us anyway. I don't think she has someone to talk to on the outside either. I don't know how she does it. She seems to be coping well, though. It could just be a facade, but if it is, she's good at it. Either way, we seem to get along okay. We have the same kind of humor. Dark. We say, pince sans rire.
Deadpan.
Yes, probably a little too deadpan. Ryan thinks we're just mean.
So, please correct me if I'm mistaken. You are saying the panels are a key to understanding whoever built this through mathematics. You have discovered symbols for addition, multiplication, equality, truth, and falsehood, as well as the numbers 1 through 7.
We have a lot more than that, actually. The formulas also include symbols for subtraction and division. Most importantly, we can interpret any number, if I got this right. As one would expect, some of the formulas have results that are higher than 7. Their mathematical system seems to be base 8. They only have 7 symbols for numbers, plus the dot. Do you know how a base 8 system works?
Enlighten me.
It's very easy to understand, just very hard to use. For us, that is. We have a base 10 system. 10 symbols for numbers if you count the 0. Basically, when we count, we go up to 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then we run out of symbols, so we add a digit, and we get 10. Which means one set of 10 plus nothing. Then we go through our 9 symbols again, 11, 12, 13, etc. And we run out at 19, so we add 1 to the second position, and we get 20, which is 2 sets of 10, and so on. Their system works the same way, but with fewer symbols. They count through 7, then add a digit, and they end up with 1 plus the dot, which you can think of as 0 or as a placeholder, if you prefer to see it that way. That means 1 set of 8 plus nothing. Then they go on with their 7 digits, 1-1, 1-2, 1-3, etc. Remember, 1-2 doesn't mean 12, it means 8 plus 2. It gets much more confusing for us when we add more digits. Something like 2-2-2-2 means 2 plus 2 times 8, plus 2 times 64, plus 2 times 512, so 1,170 in total. Now, just to make this more fun, remember how the formulas read from right to left? Well, so do the numbers. Dr. Franklin tells me the console doesn't work yet, so we can't know what it's used for. Whatever it is, since all the digits are on it, you can bet Ryan will have to punch in numbers, and he'll have to do it in base 8. I won't say it can't be done, but it's extremely hard to learn. You have to do pretty complex math in your head just to read the numbers. At least writing direction shouldn't matter when you punch in numbers on a keyboard. Still, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 their way is 5,349 our way. 12,345 our way is 30071 their way. Oh, no. I see the look on your face, but I'm not that smart. I wrote it down before you came in. I can't imagine having to do this on the fly.
That is not what I heard. They say you are brilliant. Once in a generation brilliant.
That's not true, unfortunately.
Modesty does not become you, Mr. Couture.
I've been accused of many things, but modesty not so much. I'm smart. I'm really smart. Drop me in a room with 100 people, chances are I'm smarter than 99 of them, but there's always going to be that someone. I met a lot of people at the University of Chicago who could outthink me. I met some I couldn't even understand, and not because of my English. It wasn't because I lacked technical knowledge in their field or anything like that either. They were just... It's like playing chess. Some people can only see what's in front of them. Others can see several moves ahead. I'm a couple of moves short of the great ones.
Do you believe you are the smartest person here?
Maybe. Maybe not. Rose can definitely think on her feet. Alyssa might have a few IQ points on both of us.
Who is Alyssa?
The geneticist. Rose brought her in to figure out why Kara's the only one who can use the helmet. She's not a people person, but she's a math genius. She might have figured out the panels long before me if she'd been around. I'm not sure what you want me to tell you. Do I think I'm smarter than you? Is that what you're asking?
Are you?
Without a doubt. It doesn't mean I think you're an idiot, but I'd be lying if I said no.
Fair enough. In my experience, people with superior intellect have a tendency to react poorly to failure. Did you ever think you might not succeed?
I suppose what you're asking is whether or not I ever doubted myself. No, I did not. But there was always a good chance we were never going to figure this out. I knew that. Rose knew that. Those who didn't need to ready themselves for some serious disappointment.
What do you mean?
Well, long shot doesn't even begin to describe this. I'm amazed we actually got this far. If we managed to get the leg controls working, and if the pilots can make her move without crashing, and if we can figure out how to use the console, we might be able to use her. That is, of course, if we find all the other pieces. It's a big planet. There's also a distinct possibility that she just won't work even if we do get all the pieces. She might just be broken, you know? Then, well, all the king's horses and all the king's men... Humpty Dumpty. I think that's how it goes. I'm just saying, these things are buried in the dirt. The reason for that might be slightly less romantic than what we're all hoping for.
File number 092. Interview with CW2 Ryan Mitchell, United States Army. Location: Joint Base Lewis McChord, Washington State.
Nothing happened.
That is not what I heard.
What did you... I don't understand. How could you...
Each of us has a specific function in this project, Mr. Mitchell. Dr. Franklin is in charge of all scientific aspects of this mission. You are a pilot. I know things.
I don't know what you want me to say.
I asked a very simple question. What happened?
We had one kiss.
Mr. Mitchell... It would make things easier for both of us, especially for you, if we could forego the part of this conversation where you take me for a complete idiot.
Okay, it was more than a kiss, but it's not like we defected to Russia or anything. I don't think the Army has anything to worry about.
You keep forgetting. I am not the Army, nor am I concerned with their code of conduct. I have no interest in seeing either of you court-martialed. I will, however, grow tired of asking. Just tell me what happened.
Well, we've been at this for 5 months now, full-time and alone. After a while, we either end up killing each other or we grow closer. There's really no in-between. We spend, what, 12 hours a day together in the sphere? 6 or 7 days a week. It seems pointless to go into details, but let's just say it didn't take long before I started thinking about her for the other 12 hours. But Kara's Kara. So every time I tried to get closer to her, she'd back away and give me the cold shoulder for 3 days. I tried to give her some space, as much as I could, while being in the same room. It's really hard spending that kind of time with someone without the conversation eventually slipping into personal territory. After a while, I got tired of being called by my rank and last name every time I mentioned anything not work-related. You'd be surprised how many things will strike a chord with her. I still don't know what happened to her, but apparently anything having to do with family, children, or relationships will make her mad. I mean, I really tried, but anyone who gets edgy when cats come up as a conversation topic has some serious emotional issues. A few weeks passed. I just kept my mouth shut and focused on getting the big girl walking. We tried a few things, but each time our computer model ended up flat on her face. It happened so often at first, we had to remind ourselves she would wreck a dozen houses if that happened for real. Turns out, even if I get the leg movements right, Kara still has to move the arms and torso in sync for her to keep her balance. Turning is even more complicated. I started calling every movement out loud. Left knee up, leg forward, left foot down, so she could shift the weight at the right time. After about a month of that, she started anticipating my movements, reading my body, the way I would move my shoulders before lifting a leg, things like that. I got pretty good at reading her, too. I spend my entire day looking at her, since I'm facing away from the console. You do this from sunrise to sunset every day, it starts to feel natural. Like you actually need the other person for something as simple as walking. She noticed I even stop moving my arms when I walk on my own. She says it gives me a Terminator kind of look. The liquid guy, not Arnold.
Does that mean you can make her walk?
No, not quite. Even with Kara helping with the balance, I'm still short one leg joint. I can't seem to get the upper legs to move quite right. She has really short thighs between her hips and her actual knees. I don't have that. My legs connect to the braces just below. I have to thrust my whole body upward at every step to get a natural movement out of her, and it's really hard to keep that going for more than a few steps. But we're making progress. Perhaps that's what got Kara to open up a little. Perhaps it's because we started pulling even longer shifts, but one night she asked me out for a drink. It wasn't the first time, but she always made sure Dr. Franklin or Vincent tagged along. We usually go to the Aviator's Lounge at B-Gate. Our exit inside the terminal is past security, so it's convenient, and Dr. Franklin can smoke. She doesn't really, but she likes to light one up when she drinks. She mostly stares at it. Anyway, it closes at 10:30, so we drove to a real place that's open late. It was a bit of a dive, but anything where normal people go feels pretty special these days. I don't know if I was nervous or just really tired, but I got drunk. Plowed. One bourbon, one beer. I don't think they had scotch anyway. I was on my second round when I started talking. She basically just listened to me spill my guts to her all night long. I was still mad at her, so I did it the mean way. You know, I can't stop thinking about you, but you're the coldest person I've ever met, that kind of thing. She just sat there and listened. When I became a bit too incoherent, she dragged me to her car and drove me home without saying a word. I wanted to hide under a rock the next day. More than anything, I was waiting to see what kind of hell she'd put me through for this. She didn't. We just went through our routine. She was quite cordial, actually. Nothing the next day either, then the next. After a week had gone by, I assumed she had decided it was best to pretend it didn't happen. I was still reasonably embarrassed and inclined to agree. A week later, she stopped me on the way out and asked if I still wanted to take her out to a real dinner. I tried to look like I thought about it before saying yes. I was going to pick her up on Sunday. I was at home getting ready when she called to cancel. It's not a good idea, we work together, blah, blah, blah. I should have been mad, but I thought it was mostly funny since she was the one who invited me. We went through this dance one more time until I finally had it. I just stopped by her house on our night off and told her to hurry up. She didn't argue. I must have looked more confident than I was. She offered me coffee, but I told her I'd wait in the car. I should have said yes to that coffee, because she made me wait out there for a good half hour. I was flipping through radio stations when I saw her walk out. Wow, is all I can say. I'm not sure I would have recognized her if it wasn't her house. She wore a short, skin-tight red dress, heels, the works. It made her legs look...
longer?
Yes. I was looking for something more. Anyway, she had done something to her hair. I couldn't tell what it was. Something, though. She even had makeup on. The whole thing was totally unlike her, but she just looked amazing. She obviously felt a bit out of character. She wasn't nearly as bold as usual. She looked amazing and vulnerable.
Did you like that?
That she felt vulnerable? I don't know. Maybe.
There is no shame in admitting it.
I don't get satisfaction out of making people feel smaller, if that's what you're saying. I liked that I was having some sort of effect on her, you know? I wouldn't want her to be like that all the time. She's brash, that's who she is. Still, it was special. I don't know how to explain it to you. All I think about is spending time with her. Do you understand what I'm saying? I spend 12 hours a day alone in a small room with her, and I still want, I don't know, more. It's like wanting a cigarette so bad, then you smoke a whole pack, and you're still craving.
Did you start smoking?
No, it's just a figure of speech. I couldn't think of a better one. I want to feel like I'm reaching her somehow, like she's letting me in. That night I did, for a while. It felt good.
I understand. How did your evening go?
I took her to a Brazilian steakhouse. It was a little out of my price range, but it was worth the money just to walk in there with her holding my arm. We had a really nice meal. I don't know if you like steak, but if you do, you should try that place sometime.
I do, and I might. Please continue.
This time, I made sure I stayed sober. She didn't. The lady likes red wine. About halfway through the second bottle, she started talking. How her mother never approved of the men she was with. How her mother was right every time. I'm not sure, but she made a comment in passing that led me to believe she was married once.
She was not. I can tell you that much.
Maybe I misunderstood. Whatever happened, I could tell there was a lot of pain involved. I drove her to her house after dinner. I was about to get out of the car to get the door for her when she grabbed my arm. She undid her seatbelt and jumped on my lap. Next thing I knew, my seat was down and my shirt was coming off.
That sounds like more than a kiss to me.
Maybe. But the kiss is the only part where I felt she was really with me. I don't think I mattered after that. It was cold, angry sex, you know? It felt like she was getting back at someone. This is gonna sound stupid, but I was jealous of whoever she was thinking of. He obviously meant more to her than I did at the time. Anyway, she was done pretty fast. Then she got out of the car without saying a word. That was it. That was a week ago, and we haven't talked about it since.
Do you want to talk about it?
I'd like to know where we stand. If that was just the wine, I suppose I'll handle it. But I think she could use someone who'd take care of her. I don't think I'm the best man on earth or anything like that, but I'd be good to her.
I do not wish to be presumptuous, but if I may offer a bit of advice. Ms. Resnick is in need of many things. In my humble opinion, someone who'd take care of her is not one of them.
I know. I know. Believe me, I know. It's a cat and mouse thing. Or is it the chicken or the egg? She backs off because I come on too strong. I come on stronger because I feel her slipping away.
Cat and mouse implies a love of the chase. The chicken or the egg refers to a causality dilemma. You were attempting to refer to the situation as the latter.
That's what I meant.
I know. Unfortunately, it is an inaccurate interpretation of the facts. The situation you describe does indeed reinforce itself through a feedback loop. However, the expression suggests that the initial cause cannot be determined. In this case, it can.
You mean me, right?
I do. Just let her come to you on her own terms.
File number 093. Mission Report. Operation Clean Sweep. First Sergeant Dylan Rodriguez, U.S. Army, Transportation Specialist.
Mission was a success. No friendly casualties. We used an abandoned Russian airbase near Semey in Kazakhstan as our home base. We'd been flying UAVs over eastern Siberia for 3 days when one of the drones picked up something in Tuva. It was right in the middle of nowhere, just east of a town called Sazym. It's a pretty inhospitable region, rocky hills surrounding green valleys along the Kakhem River. There was really nothing there, so the good news was we probably had some time before anyone showed up. The bad news was transport would be more difficult. We took two Kazakhs with us on the chopper. We wanted to drop them near Kizil. They said they weren't sure we could get our hands on a big enough truck there, but they knew a place in Abakan. It would mean waiting for an extra 5 hours, but it seemed a safer bet. We flew in at night and dropped them into Kakassia before we headed towards Sizin. We were approaching the crater. There was some light flickering around it. It took a few seconds before we realized we were being shot at. The helicopter dropped us about a mile away, and we doubled back on foot. We waited for sunrise to get a better sense of what was going on. Turns out the artifact had turned a marijuana field inside out. There were peasants running around the field, some of them with AK-47s. They seemed to be more concerned about their crop being lost than whatever it was that destroyed it. Transportation was about 6 hours away, and Sergeant Ortiz decided to make contact with the Tuvans. We didn't have the Kazakhs with us, but Ortiz speaks a bit of Russian. I think they recognized our guns, or maybe it was the sergeant's accent, but after a couple of minutes, they put down their AKs. We could make out one word in what they were saying. Amerikaniets! Amerikaniets! I don't know what they think of Americans in Tuva, but they sure seemed happy we weren't Russians. One of the Tuvans went back to the village to get some help. He came back with a dozen more men. With the 11 men in our squad, that meant about 40 able bodies. They helped us dig out the artifact and wrap some ropes around it. It took about an hour. Then we sat down with them and waited for the truck. That's when the Russian army showed up, sort of. It was a small truck with two men in it. If I had to guess, I'd say they were in on the marijuana trade and were coming to get a cut or something. Anyway, we hid behind the artifact as fast as we could. The Russians got out of the truck and started yelling. One of the Tuvans approached them smiling, then drew a pistol and shot both of them in the head point blank. The Kazakhs showed up with the truck 20 minutes later. It took about 90 minutes to load the artifact, then another 90 to bury the Russians and get rid of their truck. The Kazakhs told us there were a few checkpoints on the way to Kakassia, so we decided to head south on the M-54 and get air transport out of Mongolia. We met our contact at the border and flew to Afghanistan on a C-17. End report.
File number 094. Interview with Robert Woodhull, Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs. Location, White House, Washington, D.C.
This is not exactly like fixing an old car, Robert. They will get it done in time.
I hope you're right. You wouldn't want to go down in history as the idiot who started World War III for a giant paperweight.
You certainly have a flair for the dramatic.
Not really. You're doing a great job at it so far. You managed to single-handedly start the Cold War again.
And how exactly did I achieve that on my own?
Your drone planes just unearthed a very large hand in a place called Tuva.
I know.
That they found a hand? Or that there is such a place as Tuva?
Tuva is a small republic in southern Siberia. I also knew about the hand. I did not know that you had been made aware of it.
Well, you're using U.S. troops for your little pet project. Don't be surprised if they report to us when there's an international incident. And good for you about Tuva. I had to look it up.
Forgive me if I do not share in your pessimism, but the mission was a success. We retrieved the hand without any loss of life on our part, and logic dictates the Tuvans will not tell the Russians anything. I fail to see what the problem is.
That's the thing. They don't need to tell. The Russians know.
What do they know?
Everything. They know everything down to the smallest detail. The Russian ambassador gave me the play-by-play this morning. Sounded just like First Sergeant Rodriguez with a different accent. One of their planes was nearby when the hand emerged. It crashed a few miles north. They had a satellite over the site about an hour before your men arrived. He even showed me the video. The part where two Russian officers get shot is much more dramatic on television.
I assume they are not pleased.
That's the euphemism of the century. I don't even know where to begin. Mongolia's pissed because we put them on the spot. Russia followed your truck all the way to their front steps. Moscow demands an official apology, which they obviously won't get, since we're adamantly denying we had anything to do with any of this. They also have this thing on satellite photos, so they know what it looks like. It would be easier to come up with a cover story for a nondescript body part, like a forearm or a calf, like you did in Turkey. But the hand? Well, it looks like a big hand, even from 1,000 miles up. You know that by now they've tortured every Tuvan they could get their hands on, so I'd say they know even more than they did before. There's a reason we hire local mercenaries for black ops. It's called plausible deniability. You sent a bunch of frickin' Puerto Ricans with M-16s on a mission into Siberia. They didn't exactly blend in, you know.
We cannot assemble new teams in every part of the world in a matter of hours. Furthermore, involving mercenaries would pose a significant security risk. We buy mercenaries. Mercenaries are easily bought. That is what mercenaries do.
Well, for now, Russia thinks we discovered an ancient temple or something, which is fine. But how the hell do we explain why U.S. troops are now in the business of pillaging archaeological sites?
You do not.
What?
Explain. You do not admit anything, and you do not explain anything. But you give them something.
What do you have in mind?
Anything. Something they want more than a big hand. That should not prove too difficult. Dismantle a missile base somewhere. They would probably love you to take those patriots out of Poland. They will rub your face in it for a while, but they are absolutely not going to escalate the situation into something that can get, excuse the pun, out of hand. Not if you give them a way out.
Somehow I don't think the president will be too keen on weakening our position in Eastern Europe just so you can keep playing your little game.
You know as well as I do that most of these bases are just window dressing. Straw men designed to make smaller countries feel a bit mightier. Give the Russians anything they can spin politically. They will have their victory and everyone will go home happy.
Let's just hope, for both our sakes, that the next part turns up in France. Australia, anywhere they don't speak Russian. I also had an interesting conversation with the president this morning. He wants to know what you plan to do with that robot of yours, if you get it to work. The idea was always to extract advanced technology from it. So far, your people can't even repair it, let alone reverse engineer anything we can use. If your people can't do that, what are we supposed to do with the 20-story robot? We can't use it without other nations asking questions, and there's no point in hiding it in that basement forever.
I say take her out. March her down Constitution Avenue. Let everyone wonder what she can do. If you want a bigger deterrent, find a meaningless war in the middle of nowhere and annihilate one side. From what Dr. Franklin tells me, conventional weapons could not even put a scratch on her. I believe she could have driven the Iraqis out of Kuwait by herself. Are you going to tell me you would pass this up? You know this is worth a little squabble with Moscow.
Maybe. I'm still not convinced that robot is all that you say it is. While you're here, can you tell me what you're doing about getting the controls to work for someone other than the Resnick girl?
We are...
Yes?
Why do you ask?
It's just a question.
It is not. What are you not telling me?
Fine. I received an email from someone on your team. Alyssa something.
Ms. Papantonio. She is a geneticist.
Well, Ms. Papantonio.
Papantonio.
Whatever. She thinks we can't rely on that pilot of yours for something this important. She says she's too unpredictable.
Is that all she says?
No. She says that studying her should be a priority, but that Dr. Franklin won't give her the resources she needs. She also says you won't do a thing about it.
And what do you think?
I think you have what looks like a mutiny on your hands. And I don't find that the least bit reassuring.
I find it mostly annoying. But if it can make you feel better, I will let you decide what needs prioritizing. We do not have a complete robot. What we have cannot move. If and when we find the missing pieces, then it may or may not move. One of the control helmets does not work for anyone at this point. That non-functioning helmet is at a station designed for a creature with a different anatomy that we also cannot operate. What we do have is one functioning helmet, one station we can actually use, and one pilot able to use both the helmet and the station. So, Robert, where do we focus our efforts? Choose wisely.
Hey, it's your show. All I'm saying is you should have a better handle on your people. But even if we don't need to deal with it now, that Alyssa person's got a point. What are we going to do when the Resnick girl is too old? God forbid she gets hit by a truck a week from now. What if she wakes up one morning and decides she doesn't want to do this anymore? Say she decides it goes against her values. Say she gets pregnant and doesn't want to risk her life anymore. What would we do then?
Believe me, she will not. None of them will. They would not give this up for all the gold in the world, let alone for principles. We will have a few more years to analyze it. We will find a way to make it work for someone else. There is always a chance that her children could work the controls.
You want to breed pilots? You'll forgive me if I don't bring your suggestion to the president.
I do not think it will come to that, but why not? Breed them. Clone them. Ms. Papantonio would certainly not object. Who knows what we will be able to do 20 years from now? In any case, this president will be long gone when that decision needs to be made. I think this robot will still be advanced weaponry long after you and I are buried.
I don't share your optimism. This whole thing scares the hell out of me. I can't help but think it'll all blow up in our faces.
Do you like superheroes?
I'm not in the mood for a metaphor right now.
Humor me. Who is your favorite superhero?
I don't know. Superman. No, the Hulk.
Okay. Now, imagine for a minute that... What is he called when he's not the Hulk?
How should I know? I'm not 12. Wait a second. Lisa, what's the name of the guy who turns into the Hulk when he's angry? She doesn't know. How about Superman? Superman is Clark Kent. Thank you, Lisa.
Imagine that Clark Kent walks into your office one day and offers his services to fight for America. You are given the opportunity to recruit a near-indestructible soldier with superhuman strength who can fly faster than a supersonic jet fighter. Would you say no? Because Mr.
Kent.
Because Mr. Kent might someday fall ill.
That's it? That's your point? I can tell you this. I'd certainly think about it if I had to start by invading a dozen countries to pick up body parts from Mr. Kent all over the map.
File number 118. Interview with CW3, Kara Resnick. United States Army. Location: Underground Complex, Denver, Colorado.
Yes, I slept with him. Are you happy now?
I did not mean him.
Well, which one do you mean? The one in jail or the one in the hospital? I slept with both of them, so take your pick. I sleep with everybody. It's just the kind of girl I am.
There is no need to be on the defensive. I am not accusing you of anything. I just want to know what happened.
You're not accusing me. Now that's a relief. You can just go ahead and say it. It's not a matter of opinion. I know this is all my fault. Believe me, I know.
You can start by telling me what happened with Mr. Mitchell.
I don't know what to tell you. We spent so much time together. He's kind. I'm not used to men being kind. I've made the wrong choices every single time when it comes to men. Ryan, he's a good guy. Leave it to me to pick Mr. Wright and still get it wrong. I mean, I knew better. I knew this wasn't for me. He just wore me down. I caved in, and I was hoping I'd wake up the next day and all the pain would be gone. All that self-doubt. But of course, I felt exactly the same. You don't erase a lifetime of mistakes by sleeping with some man in a car. no matter how kind he is. I tried, I swear.
You saw him again after you made love in the car?
We didn't make love in the car. I jumped him. I had too much to drink. That was me being...
self-destructive?
I was gonna say me being me, but that works, too. He knew, that's the worst part. I was hoping he didn't, but he knew. I felt horrible,